It's Thursday, March 21st, Friday, March 22nd, if you're on the East Coast, across the pond, or down under. And this, my friends, is Spaced Out Radio. Hope you had a great day and night. I am your host, Dave Scott, broadcasting to you live from the Great White North, on top of the mountains of central British Columbia, right here at SOR headquarters. We welcome you to tonight's show. Thank you so much for tuning in, especially if you're listening in on Deep Talk Radio or Revolution Radio. If you want to take a listen to our archives, they are free at youtube.com/spacedoutradio. Just do old Davey the favor, hit that subscribe button. Our website is spacedoutradio.com, where we have a plethora of features for you. Rock out to Bumblefoot, go shopping at our Spaced Out Radio store, read up on the SOR Newswire, and so much more. Tonight's show is brought to you by the YouTube channel and Suho. Sebastian Martin brings high-quality messages to the masses. Head to our websites, hit the Insuho banner, and subscribe today. Tonight we were originally going to be talking cryptids. However, our guest, Robert Robinson, couldn't make it on. At the last minute, he had to cancel out. So we are shifting gears for the second night in a row, heading north of the 49th parallel, but this time to talk some UFOs. Michel Deschamps runs NUFORS, a website that looks into all aspects of ufology around the world. His website, NUFORS.com, that's NUFORS.com. His research has been well documented all over the world and with popular media outlets as well, along with the fact Michel's had 27 personal sightings since 1974, including capturing two on film. Then in the bottom of hour number three, we'll bring you the SOR Newswire, where we're going to have a little bit of breaking news in there, so you definitely want to take a listen to that. Michel Deschamps, it's been about 3 years since you were last on Spaced Out Radio, but we're always glad to have you back. Thank you so much for filling in on short notice.
Oh, thank you. I hadn't realized it was that long since our last show.
It was. I know. I was looking it up today, and I was like, you got to be kidding me. You know, that's just ridiculous that it's taken that long. But you know what? I'll take the blame for that, my friend. I will personally take the blame for that. How have you been doing?
Not too bad. Just actually getting back into my lecturing. Actually, I was invited not too long ago to speak in front of some 8-year-olds and 9-year-olds at our local library branch.
Oh, nice.
For March break. Yeah.
Well, yep. You know what? What's that like talking in front of kids about UFOs? What's the response you get?
Actually, I was surprised because they actually had questions, and one little kid in particular, his question just threw me off like big time, because I had spoken before at a university, and there was 27 students there, and obviously older, and not a single question. But here we had seven kids. I think there were seven kids and three parents that showed up. And the one kid asked me a question in terms of validity of a UFO report. If you've got two witnesses to the same object, but they each are looking at the object from different perspectives, and how, even if their sketches don't exactly match, how do I justify the validity of the case? So I was like, wow. So I explained that a lot of cases, yeah, the sketches don't always match, but you could have like three or four witnesses just having witnessed the same object, but being depending where they were standing, they will portray the UFO in a different manner than the other two. So it was a pretty interesting question. And they want me back. The library wants me back to do one for adults, and I can't charge any money, of course, because it's nonprofit. Well, so am I, really. If I make any money at all, it'll either go to purchase my supplies, and if I have all my equipment for my PowerPoint, then it automatically goes towards car repairs and whatever. So, but it was fun, and yeah. And I also found out that the library is set up for PowerPoint as well. But I did this old school. I had an easel, and I had my laminated poster boards.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. That sounds so much fun when you are sitting there and chatting with kids about it, because you never know what children are going to ask. Their imaginations are going very, very fast, and sometimes children ask the best questions, don't they?
Yeah. Yeah, and especially 9-year-olds, that's seems to be a starting age for a lot of people, that whether you're investigating UFOs or investigating ghosts, it seems that age 9 is a starting point for a lot of these people. some reason.
Why do you say that? Why do you think it's there?
I think because at that age, you're not fashioned by society yet. So you're pretty well open-minded to all kinds of things and possibilities. And I guess maybe some people are even hypersensitive at that age, especially if, it all depends if you look at it as an interest that simply came your way, or you're actually somehow guided into looking into it. You know, that's the question I've been asking myself. Like, why am I always looking into this when I've wanted to bow out so many times before? And I had my first sighting when I was 9, but that particular one wasn't even confirmed until years later. But yet I was open-minded. There's something really weird too that I once mentioned to my mom. And this is something from a kid. I don't know if I was 9 or 10. I told my mom, I says, there's either two things I want to be. I either want to be a priest or I want to be dead. And my mom looked at me and said, what? I says, well, a priest, my mom, we came from a really religious Catholic background, which eventually changed because of the UFO, information coming in. But the dead part, I basically said, Mom, death is a transition from one life state to another, and it's the greatest adventure you can ever undertake. But that's what I said at age 9 or 10, and it's like, I don't even know where that came from, but yeah. So age 9 is maybe it's a point of awareness where kids will start formulating questions and looking at the larger world that's out there rather than what's just in front of their noses.
Do you think children are a little bit more in the believers section of UFOs and extraterrestrial phenomena rather than their parents were?
I think yes, and probably because now of the amount of information that's on TV or on occasion coming through across newspaper reports, through books, through children's books as well that have been written on the subject. And if the kids of today are still being shown or taught about the stuff that I grew up on, like the first men on the moon and things like that, then of course their minds are going to wander, and the questions will pop up in their minds as to what else is out there. Is this all that we are? Is this all that we're meant to be? And what else is on the other side of the veil? So,
well, Michelle, it's one of those things. You have been studying UFOs since 1974. You've had 27 sightings of your own. What kind of craft have you seen?
I can't say that I've seen a structured vehicle per se. I would love to have said that. A lot of the stuff I saw were lit up or lighted in a very unusual way. The one object I could describe as being fair size was a sighting that I had in 1990 at the one radar base, which was made famous back in 75 due to the UFO flyovers of October, November 75, and that base is no longer existing, but through my binoculars, as I watched the object that one particular night, I went back during the day to look at any of the part of the structure at the radar base to see if there's anything comparable in size. And I noticed there was one particular part of the installation that actually was as wide as the object looked to me the previous night through the binoculars. And so eventually I made my way there, snuck up there through the back way, and brought a couple of reporters from a local tabloid called the South Side Story. I had to wait till they finished their smokes, because they were both smokers and I'm not, until we actually got to measure the size of the building. And the building is exactly square, and it measured pretty well 40 feet in one direction and 40 feet the other. So my estimation is that even though I was 4.5 miles away, because later on I got a map indicating where I was in reference to the location of the base, I was exactly 4.5 miles away from the base, and the object actually measured about approximately 40 feet in diameter. And it just simply hovered there, couldn't see the base, because the base itself, the buildings itself weren't lit up, but the highway lampposts, you could judge where the location of the base was. And this thing just hovered about, to me, it seemed like 50, 60 feet off the ground, but nothing came down, no beam. I never saw any of the beings in any of my sightings, including that one. other objects that I saw were, well, they were all completely silent. One sketch I drew, which is on my website, it looks like a couple of sea urchins. It's because the nucleus, the light source itself, was really small, but the rays coming off of them were like long spikes of light, and this was like 7 cycles per second that they flashed. And one object, I thought at first that they were both attached to the same object, but no, the one on my right, which was heading north, they were both heading north, and I was looking due west, actually was distancing itself from the second one, so I knew they were detached. And they flew at the speed of jet fighters. I couldn't estimate how fast, but they were just totally silent. Had I had my back turned to them, I would have missed the whole thing. And I had my camcorder at that time, which is a full VHS size camcorder by Sharp, aimed in their direction. But the light, as it came on, was so faint that my video camera never captured anything there. But I've had other sightings where, the one daytime sighting I did capture. It was a beautiful blue sky. I set up my camera on a tripod outside for more stability. Unfortunately, I had forgotten to set it up for manual. So, of course, with the automatic focus, it'll focus on near objects and far objects. And so as I tried to film the object in the sky, which I later found out the cloud ceiling was at 6,000 feet, and I don't know exactly how many miles away the object was from my eyes and the viewfinder, but the camera kept going in and out of focus, and I got frustrated at it for a while, and I lowered the camera, shut it down, and I kept looking at the object with my binoculars as it went in a large curve. I was looking at it when I first saw it and filmed it. I was east-northeast, and then it went through a cloud bank, which was at 6,000 feet, and when it initially entered the cloud, it looked like a white cigar, but when it came out the other side, it became it was a white sphere. And then I just followed my binoculars until it wrapped around to the north and then the northwest, and then it was gone. And so that was one of my film footage that I took. The other one was a nighttime footage of an object that flew in between Venus and the moon and got hidden quickly from view by the neighbor's tree. But this object came over the roof of the house, even though I couldn't distinguish anything in the darkness. And it looked like an orange, like the comet Hale-Bopp, but it was orange in color and it had a slight orangey halo around it. And I had filmed the comet Hale-Bopp like years before, the same time that everybody was experiencing the Phoenix Lights. I actually managed to capture the comet on my camcorder. So those few of my sightings and the ones that I could sketch are, like I said, sketched and they're represented on my website.
Very interesting that you were able to capture that, and that had to be such a thrill for you that you were able to get it on film, because for so many people out there, Michelle, they have this experience and they're so in awe by it because their mind cannot comprehend what their eyes are seeing that they forget that they have the camera on their phone or even in their hands. Yeah. And so many times we've probably missed the best footage ever because of that.
Exactly.
Go ahead.
No, well, considering that compared to what the cell phones are like today, the footage that I have, and I think it's very, very short in duration, because like I said, I got frustrated after a while. And plus, I was looking through a very tiny viewfinder. Now, if the surface of the viewfinder had been as large as the screen on a cell phone, I wouldn't have been able to center the object, but instead the object is down below and I'm looking through the viewfinder trying to locate the object, which fortunately I did get in the shot. And I wish now that even cell phones of today would have some kind of really good optical zoom, because then people could zoom in. Recently, some people did film an object in broad daylight in Blind River while they were shoveling snow. And you can see on the object, on the cell phone, it's that clear of a shot that even at the distance that it sat from your eyes, you would make out a small fin if it was a plane. And it's a perfect oval moving between the rooftop and the moon, which was out too. And I don't know how far out. My estimation is it was at about, it seems to be the same size of what I captured on video. So my estimation is it was at least at 6,000 feet in altitude and about 6-7 miles out. It could have been more, but I need to go to that location myself and stand there and see at which angle they actually were filming from. But having had a surface area of that large, instead of a tiny viewfinder, would have been a lot easier to center the object.
Let me ask you, in regards to Canadian ufology, a lot of the focus in regards to UFOs always seems to be circled around the United States, whether it's Roswell, Kecksburg, Area 51, Dulce, Dugway, Wright-Patterson. Yeah. Everything seems to be focused there. However, being a Canadian ufologist that you are, and you're one of the premier in this country, how much of a story is UFOs up here in the Great White North?
Oh, it's a big story. I mean, some of the reports I've read, UFO crashes, those are pretty rare. We are familiar with the Shag Harbor incident. I also heard rumors of a UFO crash in 1955 near Owen Sound, which is down south from me on the way to Toronto. Not much detail there. Landing sites I know of. One I have investigated. The other one is a former a retired OPP officer that I know, Ontario Provincial Police, which I will be interviewing full length in the next couple of weeks. The newspaper articles alone are telling me that UFOs are just as big of a story in Canada as they are in the States. The States is just more popular because where they have their installations and where rocketry was being tested in the 1940s and 1950s, and as well as the large radar installations they have there, they have more occurrences of UFO crash retrievals than anywhere else in the world. But that's where the main focus is in regards to ufology, where it stands and how much information is coming out. But Canada, we have an annual Canadian survey that comes out every year for the preceding year, of how many sightings were at taken place. And I don't know how in-depth the investigations are. Every UFO group that I know of seems to have gone the way of the dinosaurs, you know. And I became an independent because I was also in disarray with the way that MUFON was being run, like the brouhaha that I heard in the States. And I don't know who's left to investigate reports. It's not, there's no shortage to make, well, in the past, there was no shortage of information. It's funny. It's like almost as if the UFOs have gone on to do something else because the cool sightings where there's UFO car encounters or landings, seem to be a thing of the past, like the late 40s, the 50s, the 60s, the 70s, and the 80s, with my research. The reason I cut it off at when I researched the Sudbury Star, for instance, and I'm one of only two Canadians to ever do this, and I became a member or a contributor to Project 1947, where they tried to determine if there was any other major waves of sightings that preceded 1947, and there was none except for the airship sightings of 1896 and 1897. And then since 47, up for a while, there used to be a rash of sightings every 5 years, it seemed. But in the research that I was doing, the UFO articles were so far in between, I was reading more newspapers on the screen than I was actually finding news clippings. So I decided to cut off the research at December of 89. And when I started doing the research using the 46, because I was studying the ghost rockets of Sweden. And I actually found accidentally, or not by accident, two articles that were dated at the turn of the century, 1914 and 1916, local happenings here in Sudbury. And the one article I should have copied as well was the very first flight from Toronto to anywhere. And what year was that? 1919. So what was flying around? One report was a nighttime flyer, something that was following the railroad line into Sudbury, and one telegraph operator would contact the other one, letting him know that an object with a light on was actually following the railroad into Sudbury. This is 1916. The one in 1914 looked like the Wright brothers' plane with a pilot at the helm, and it landed not too far from where a picnicking family actually saw them. But like I said, I came across an article in 1919 for the first flight of any airplane anywhere, and it was from Toronto to I forget where. And so it took me 2.5 years to just do that newspaper, the Sudbury Star, and even though it goes way back to the 1800s as the Sudbury Journal, I found over 350 clippings. Now, as well as that newspaper on microfilm at Laurentian University here in Sudbury, they also have the papers from Sault Ste. Marie, Ontario, Timmins, Kirkland Lake, and North Bay, which is where our NORAD base used to be, or still is, but in a very small fashion now, because I think they've downsized over the years. I used the major important happenings here, and the usual dates, like we knew that Roswell took place in early July 47. So, of course, I'd use those dates to locate articles in those other papers. And some I did. I did find only the one mention about the recovery of a disc. And that was, I believe, in the North Bay paper, because that is a military town. But the other papers never had a mention of Roswell whatsoever. But then I go on for to look for Kelly Hopkinville's encounter of the creatures. There was also the Levelland, Texas landings of these 300-foot discs that would knock out power along the highway to different installations, military installations in New Mexico. And then, of course, in 75, well, the flyover, I found quite a few clippings about that. So I would cross-reference the other papers, but I need to go back and get retrained because they've changed some of the equipment at the university, and I have to get retrained on how to use them so that I can then again go back to the other microfilms, the other four Northern Ontario newspapers, and see if I can do the same. Now, I'm estimating it'll take 2.5 years for each of those papers, but it's a lot of research. And I started out with my friend Todd Frazier, but after a while, I guess he got bored or something because it became monotonous, you know? So I wound up being by myself. And then when I met Errol Bruce Knapp, the late Errol Bruce Knapp, and all the other ones with MUFON Ontario when I joined in 1991, well, a few years later, 2007, he gave me the programs to get started with my website.
Michelle, I'm going to get you to hold on right there, my friend, as we are going to step out for break here at the bottom of the hour. Michelle Deschamps from NewForce.com is our guest tonight on Spaced Out Radio. UFOs all over North America. That's where we're looking. We'll be back with more right after this.
You're listening to Spaced Out Radio live with Dave Scott on the Deep Talk Radio Network.
Welcome back to the second half hour of Spaced Out Radio tonight. I am your host, Dave Scott. Great to have you along for the ride. Remember, a good way to support this show is by heading to our website, clicking on the shop tab, because you'd look good in one of our t-shirts, hats, hoodies, drinking out of one of our coffee mugs. Great way to support what we do by shopping at our Spaced Out Radio store. We are talking Canadian ufology and ufology right around North America tonight from NewForce.com. Michel Deschamps, he has been checking out UFOs for the better part of three decades. Michelle, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Dave. It's fun to be back.
Right before the break, I was talking to you about, you know, ufology. What is Canada's role in this? If we look at ufology today, yes, we can say that Canadians are having a plethora of sightings. We got a lot of dark sky up here, especially in the wintertime. Are people up north seeing more UFOs when we get into fall and winter comparatively to summer, even though it's cold and a lot of people don't like being outside at that time of year?
I think it's mostly in the summer when people are outside, more likely to be outside than in winter. I mean, I know personally I won't go outside unless I spot something coming home from work, because I work 3 in the afternoon to 11 at night. So I always looking at the sky when I come home at 11. But in winter, I don't tend to want to freeze my butt standing outside because I've been accused many times when I see something, oh, yeah, you're going to see something for a few seconds and claim it to be a UFO. No, you have to stand outside sometimes, so, you know, as long as you can to watch something. And I prefer to do that in the summer and the fall and spring than in winter. But as per ratio, I'm not sure if our numbers come up more during those clear nights in winter or the other three seasons put together.
What kind of craft are people seeing? And Canada's a big place. Are you getting reports from coast to coast to coast or just mainly out of Ontario, Quebec, where you were located?
Basically, simply just out of my location. I occasionally get something out of Ottawa, places like that, especially if I've made contacts on Facebook. But usually it's local reports, and now it's gotten so bad where I have to chase down the witnesses in order to get the details. One of the recent sightings we had, or someone had, was the girlfriend of one of the kids who works at our local Tim Hortons, actually was coming home in the town of Garson, which is a few miles northeast of here. On the way to the Sudbury Airport, as a matter of fact. And she saw a black triangular object with lights on each corner, and it was there just for a few seconds. Now, on the same night, oddly enough, there was a report of an earthquake. Now, I don't know if it's an earthquake, or if it was a rock burst, because there is a mine shaft there. I mean, we're located. Sudbury is located on the rim of an asteroid impact. And most, if not all, of the mine sites are actually on the rim surrounding the impact crater. And so that's why we have a plethora of different minerals. Some are more expensive than others. And mining is what basically, I think, the mining industry is what attracts UFOs. And the black triangles, reports around here, they go back to the 50s at least. And, yeah. The sad thing is I recently had a falling out with a young friend. She would believe that these black triangles were being piloted by military men. But around here, since the base has been gone, I don't think the military is in the habit of going for joyrides with some super secret aircraft in the hopes or not hopes of being reported as a UFO. And these things are dead silent and are huge, depending how close the person saw this. But from the based on the other reports, they're I don't know where they're from, but we've had those. We've had discs, a lot of light sources that behave in a weird way. They may look like a normal light or a star, but it's the movement that's different. I was also recently accused of not knowing what I'm looking at. And just jumping to conclusions right away that I'm seeing a UFO within 2 or 3 seconds. No, every single sighting I've had, it's not just gawking at it and just admiring what it is. I made a point of studying the behavior because I knew it was going to be a point of argument down the line eventually and to make a distinction between that and how man-made objects behave, whether it's a drone or Chinese lanterns, which are two of the items we've we've had more Chinese lantern sightings than drone sightings, and drones I've actually filmed a few just to show what they look like and what they sound like, just to differentiate. My website has a lot of pages that I would not find anywhere else on UFO characteristics, for instance, like what to look for in a UFO sighting, and then in a separate page would be all the typical explanations or the quick fix explanations to explain away UFO sightings, whether it's a drone or a Chinese lantern or atmospheric phenomena. And so everything was different steps in evolution. I wish I'd come up with that entire website in one shot, but like I said, it started out in 2007. And then I would place myself in the shoes of a non-believer or someone who had never seen a UFO and ask the questions, what would you want to see on this website? And so I try to put as much information as I can so that people would not have too many questions left to ask, since you know, a reasonable amount of information would be there for them to take into consideration once they've had a sighting, and how to, you know, if they can just make, you know, use the reference points just to realize whether or not they saw something man-made or something that's totally unexplained that is possibly from somewhere else.
Well, here's the thing I want to ask you, because the Canadian military is not known for its technological aircraft. Outside of the 30-year-old CF-18 Hornets, there really isn't a fighter plane in Canada. It's not like the U.S. where you have F-15s, F-16s, F-18s, F-35s, F-22 Raptors, and a multitude of aircraft. Up here, we don't really have that. So when we are looking in the skies above and seeing these strange objects that could be around, in Canada, is it more thought of that it would be something UFO, or could it be man-made?
Well, I would tend to think it would be the first, but some people actually think of the latter, that it could be a black op type of operation where they just want to embed the idea of UFOs. But I said that doesn't make any sense, because in all the writings that emanated from the military, they don't want people to link UFOs to being something real. They want to get away with the stigma and the aura of mystery. So why would they fly over here with some super secret object in the hopes of being, or not necessarily in the hopes, but accidentally being reported as a UFO, and then deny that they, you know, there's no such thing as UFOs? So why would they show up here? And you know, so that is one illogical argument that I've gotten into. And I think the more of the objects that we get to see, and because of that, that everything's pretty well restricted to the States. And plus, if they do have any testing of anything, it'll be in out-of-the-way places like Area 51, and not just Area 51, but that Area 51 is just one part of that entire range, which is totally off-limits to anybody, and it's a no-fly zone. So those would be the places where these things would be kept and flown, because if they try to venture out and all of a sudden something goes wrong and they crash, well, their super-secret toy is now revealed, and it's no longer a secret. And then they have to go back to the drawing board and come up with something better to do whatever they do, which is usually go into another country, take photographic evidence, and come back, you know, like a fast penetrator. And most of these aircraft cannot hover and rotate on their axis. They're like a shark. They have to keep moving because the airflow has to go through either the pulse detonation system or whatever kind of propulsion system they have. Now, my friend Todd, he says that the B-2 bomber has some kind of technological aid in the wingtips, which is almost akin to anti-gravity. But I still am wrapping my head around the idea that we have possibly come up with anti-gravity, because then if we did, why are we building these F-18s? I mean, I remember when I worked at Cold Lake Air Force Base in Alberta, when I was volunteering as Katimovic, as Katimovic participant, we worked on the base, but we lived off the base, and I got to see these planes up close. And I'd heard reports that, like the way the planes are manufactured, they develop fissures in the wings, and we'd lose a couple of pilots. And you know, they were doing testing up there, like with the cruise missiles back in the 1980s as well. And so, why are we using technology that's so backwards? If we have these super secret vehicles that could eradicate war, I mean, I know war is a good money making machine, and obviously in their minds, as crazy as they are, the military, they want wars to continue, because it forces them to go back to research and development and come up with better weapons, better defense systems, better targeting system, better delivery systems. And money is being made and people are being paid. But at the same time, I mean, the poor UFOs are stuck in the middle of all this, and we're labeling them left and right as simply military devices of secrecy, and nothing out of the ordinary or extraterrestrial. And so I think in Canada, we can't just simply dismiss the reports as being military testing or whatever, because they have areas to do that, and they're not, military's not paid. They have a structured agenda, and they're not paid to joyride. I don't care what my friends say. I know we've gotten to our arguments, but then we're back at having coffee together the next week. So, yeah.
Excuse me about that. That cough came out of nowhere. But nonetheless, we got about 9 minutes here before we got to go to break at the top of the hour. And when you were at Cold Lake, Canada's Cold Lake military range is about the size of Nellis Air Force Range, if not a tad bigger or smaller.
Yeah.
In Nevada. And they have numerous lands. This is where the United States actually tested a lot of the cruise missiles, because the range is extremely large and there is no population around. It's very easy to be able to hide something in that area, like a secret base that would look into UFOs. Do you think that is happening on Canadian soil?
I heard rumors that there are military installations that are only accessible by air. I thought there was a place like that north of in Winnipeg somewhere. I'm not sure even if Ontario had something. We had different radar installations that were part of the Dew Line, Falconbridge being one. There was also Sioux Lookout. Raymore is up by Kirk and Lake and Timmins. The possibility exists, I guess, that the U.S. military would have a base of some kind or a staging area on Canadian soil, especially if I were to believe that they have listening posts throughout the entire world, especially 100. I think it was last time I heard it was 132 CIA listening posts, because the military is not going to turn their backs. They know that UFOs are real, unlike the fact that they're publicly stating that there's nothing to it and there is no threat to national security of any sort. They know they're there. I mean, yeah, when you hear stuff like the one guy who worked for the NRO claiming that over half of the satellites are looking outward, away from Earth, what the hell are they looking for? I always thought the satellites aimed at the Earth were communication satellites, GPS satellites now, television signal satellites, and communication satellites. So it's like, if over half of the satellites are looking out into space, what are they aware of? What do they know that's out there that they're not telling us? So I wouldn't be surprised if they had some kind of base, just like I'm not surprised that the UFOs have bases on the planet. It's a lot easier for them to do that than to travel back a million miles or wherever they're from, come back for a few more days, and go back home again, when they could have like duck blinds here and there and other places which are out of access for us, like the deepest oceans where our subs would implode at a certain depth, or even the dark side of the moon.
Do you believe then, when we see places like Area 51, Dugway, Wright-Patterson, or Cold Lake, Alberta, that they are hiding some sort of UFO technology?
Well, Area 51 could be hiding something. Initially, Area 51 what was moved to Area 51 was initially at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base at the Foreign Technology Division. That's where they recovered anything that was foreign, whether it was Russian, German, or possibly extraterrestrial. And then because so much hardware was coming in, they obviously had to move that somewhere to a more secure location, which would encompass all the hardware they were getting in. And I tend to side with Bob Lazar that the saucers are not exactly, or the captured vehicles recovered or whatever, not necessarily given. I don't think the aliens would simply give us technology. I think they all occurred in crashes, they were shot down. They were kept at another installation called S4. Now, although if you listen to people like David Adair, who said that he had seen something that looked like an engine the size of a school bus, which obviously belonged to a much larger craft, like possibly these 300 feet, you know, diameter vehicles that some people will consider motherships, if they've managed to bring down a few. There was I listened to a video report where he said he actually, he was shown one and found out that there was they work with symbiotic by touching his hands, running his hands across it. The beings who control the ships are actually part of the circuitry. And to me, that makes sense. I mean, they're telepathic. They probably have way more control, and they're definitely experts in spacefaring. We're still just getting over the bars of the cradle in terms of spaceflight. And when I hear rumors that we've been on Mars for the last 40 years, and like people like Corey Good and people like that, I have hideouts. I mean, I don't believe any of that stuff. I'd have to see evidence for that. Just like I require evidence for my own sightings and other people's sightings. But you also know when somebody's seen something, you look in their eyes and their eyes all glaze up, and it changes you forever. It's one of the tip-offs that I've noticed after talking to a lot of people who have seen things compared to the people who haven't. The people who haven't seen anything are the ones who are creating the fake CGIs on YouTube. I can tell a fake UFO CGI on YouTube from a real one because they have too many. Yeah, well, a lot of times they have too many appendages. They UFOs are very plain in appearance. And when what they are putting on there on YouTube would be something that we build as a small model for a science fiction movie. I mean, I've seen all the ones I've saw, they were all one different from the next. And the behavior sometimes was just as weird, if not the same. But for us to have vehicles that can perform that same way, oh my God, it would take us so far technologically. But I think sociologically, I think we're not prepared to handle that just yet. You know, we're having enough difficulty catching up with the technology that we have, like cell phones. That kind of stuff is readily available. And I just have my doubts as to what extent they actually have back engineered technology to create vehicles I've never seen. I've seen cell phones that can do amazing things. I'm sure the military's computers are 100 years ahead of our computers, but to claim that they have vehicles that can outperform anything else, and to have them based here in Canada or somewhere else, I have my doubts. If they do have a functioning vehicle, it's probably alien, and they don't want to venture it out. I mean, I don't even know if they've mastered how to fly them yet. You know, there's so many things we don't have enough evidence for, and just talking that you know, like, for instance, the Nazi Germany having discovered conceptual drawings, as I call them, of these super large saucers with large turret guns. Now, just because they have conceptual drawings doesn't mean they went into production. So for people talking about Vril technology and the Nazis had UFO technology and anti-gravity way back in 1945, to me, it's BS. I would have to see evidence for that, too.
Well, we want to see evidence on absolutely everything that is out there. Yeah. We got about 90 seconds before we have to go to break here. But in regards to the idea that there is technology being hidden, sure, there's been whistleblowers out there, but there's a lot of holes in each and every one of their stories, including Bob Lazar, who I do believe worked there. But in regards to these whistleblowers, how can we trust them? How do we trust this information if we are involved?
Yeah, that's the hard part, because sometimes I wonder if even if we knew the answer, would we really like the answer? Like, how far have they back engineered the technology, and what else are they doing with it if they have somehow made breakthroughs that they're not telling us about? You know, whether it's free energy, like a byproduct would be a free energy which would get rid of, you know, nuclear power and the toxicity that takes place. I mean, we're pretty good at making nuclear power. We just don't know. We're not very good at getting rid of it and dropping it back into the environment without polluting the crap out of the planet and whatever else. So, it's hard to say how you can judge like somebody. When Bob Lazar, I believe him because he's never changed his story, never deviated his story, just like Travis Walton in his own respect. For his own story and his own encounter has never changed his story. But people that will embellish, they will change their story from one retelling to another. Those are the ones you can tell that are not telling the truth, because there's always that when they swear they won't add any details, and then the next time they tell their story, they've added a new detail.
I get you right there. Get you right there. Michelle, you sit tight. We are going to go into hour number two, talking UFOs, UFO studies, cases across Canada and the United States. Going to be a lot of fun. Michelle Deschamps' website, newfors.com. That's NOUFORS.com. Go check it out. We'll be back with hour number two.
Every night on Spaced Out Radio, we have places for you to hang out. Hi, this is Carl. Join our SOR Space Travelers group on Facebook for live chat. On Twitter, using hashtag Spaced Out Radio, you can also join us in our Spreaker chat room. Check us out on Instagram at Dave Scott SOR. All of our archives are free on YouTube at Spaced Out Radio. By the way, I'll be watching you at your window until you do. Bye!